G'day everyone, that was Big Country with Driving to Damascus, the title track from their album released in 1999, and welcome to Kaleidoscope Ears for another week. A huge night ahead of us tonight. We're going to be speaking with Tony Butler from the UK later on in the program, but it's another chance to play some of my very favourite tracks from Big Country. And we'll be listening all around the world as well, so for those tuning in via edgeradio.org.au, welcome to you as well. We've got some exciting stuff coming up ahead. Now, Big Country recently reformed under the name of BBW, which is the initials of the three remaining members of Big Country, and released an EP only a couple of months ago. So that's the main thing we're going to be talking about through the night, and we're going to talk a lot about the history of Big Country with Tony Butler later on too. So we're going to play all the tracks from the BBW EP, and some other solo stuff from Tony's, and a bit of, lots of Big Country as well. So stay tuned. We've got probably a special guest coming into the studio with all the text messages that came in last week on 0427 Edge FM. Mr. ELO Joe may be making an appearance in the studio. So prepare yourselves. The King of Soft Rock Enthusiasts in Southern Tasmania may be coming in. But I guess in Australia, Big Country has got a lot of airplay, but only one of their songs has been thrashed to death on the radio. So I got out the one that would be most recognisable to Australian listeners, but a live version, and in it, Stuart Adamson, the lead singer, introduces the other members of the band. Joining me on Kaleidoscope Ears tonight is Tony Butler from Big Country, all the way from London. Welcome to the program, Tony.
Oh, good evening. How are you?
Yeah, well, thank you. Very well. Kaleidoscope Ears listeners would know how much of a Big Country fan I am. We play you all the time on the program. 2007, you reformed with Bruce and Mark for a 25th anniversary tour. What motivated you to do that?
A lot of peer pressure, actually. it's kind of... Since Stuart's untimely passing, I kind of really divorced myself from the music industry and really kind of thought, well, you know, I've been very lucky. I've played in a very, very special band, you know, for, you know, over a 25-year period. And, you know, we really did, you know, we had a great sense of worth and being, and everything we did wasn't just your normal rock and roll band thing. You know, we really did think that we had something really special. And I just didn't think that there was anything to be done afterwards, really. And I thought to myself that if I'm going to do anything, I need to find a new challenge in life. So I decided to become a teacher. You know, I've taken so much out of the business, I decided to put something back in that particular way. And then, say, 2006, I was beginning to get sort of people talking about reunion this, do that. And I finally succumbed in 2007 because of the 25th anniversary aspect. And I thought, well, you know, it'd be a nice way for us to pay homage to the band and to Stuart, but I decided if we were going to do it, I didn't really want to get involved with anybody else, and we'd just kind of do it with the three of us, which should also be a challenge, because to actually just do it as a three-piece would have... I think it made us feel better about doing it, as opposed to doing it any other way. So we did. We got into a rehearsal room, played some of the old songs, I sung some of the songs, Bruce sung some songs, and it was great. So we decided to do it seriously and put together a few dates to celebrate the 25th anniversary, and that went so well. You know, we decided to, you know, as we normally did as a team, we just wrote some more material, of which we recorded, which transpired to be the BBW EP.
That's the main thing we're here to talk about tonight. But going right back to the beginning, just for a few minutes, you were playing with the Pretenders in the early 80s.
That's right.
What made you decide to join Big Country over the Pretenders?
God, that's a long time ago now.
Yeah,
basically, the catalyst was a record producer called Chris Thomas, who I'd worked with on Pete Townshend albums. And because he was the Pretenders producer, the untimely death of their guitarist and bass player, they were scheduled to make a record, and Chris asked me if I wanted to work on the record, which was Back on the Chain Gang. And I jumped at the chance because I was a great Pretenders fan. But just at that time, I just joined Big Country. Big Country were kind of band that I've always wanted to be with. I mean, I had great respect for Stuart's guitar playing, and you know, the idea of forming a group to play the kind of music that we did was really appealing. But when I had the opportunity to work with Chrissy, you know, I had a big dilemma because I really admired and adored Chrissie, and to work with them was just a dream come true. But I kind of got the feeling that my options and opportunities, and you know, if I was going to do something special with my life within a group context, I kind of felt it would be better off with Big Country.
And I think, from my personal point of view, you were absolutely right too.
it was a gamble.
Yeah, and one that I believe paid off anyway.
Yeah.
You were going to come to Australia during the 80s. What happened with that tour? Why was it cancelled?
Well, I think because of the way that things started off with the band in terms of popularity. I mean, the Crossing album became... I mean, not only did it sort of hit big in Britain, but it became big in America as well. We found ourselves in America quite a lot. And I think around that time, 1983, 84, I mean, we were just continually touring and wearing ourselves out, basically. And we were scheduled to come to Australia and the Far East. And I think we got as far as Japan. And we started doing some Japanese dates. And basically, fatigue, exhaustion, and unmeasurable amounts of alcohol consumption got the better of a couple of us. And I think the whole thing kind of fell apart, and, you know, basically it was a band who were completely, you know, on their knees by that time. So we postponed the Australian leg and never really got an opportunity to come back. And we did come back to make a video.
You did. I was going to ask you about that. A couple of videos.
Which is very bizarre.
For the Peace in Our Time album.
That's right, yeah.
Why didn't you do some gigs while you're out here then?
Well, it's just the way that things were scheduled at the time. I mean, the decision to go out to Australia to make the videos was a quickly taken decision. Purely and simply, it was because of the availability of the director, which is one of your beloved directors, Richard Lernstein. And I think we just had a kind of window to go and work with him, which meant that there wasn't really enough time to organise anything else. And as usual with record companies, they put together promotional things. And so by the time we finished the video, we were back in Europe promoting. In fact, we were back in America promoting the album. And we also had this big Russian thing going on at the same time. So going out to Australia to make a video wasn't really the greatest of ideas. But if we wanted to work with Richard, we had to.
Looking back on the 80s, what would the biggest highlight of the 80s Big Country period be for you?
All of it. It was all such a special time. It was a whirlwind time for the band. We weren't the most commercial of bands, but for the music to be regarded in such commercial terms was a big buzz for us. The fact that, we knew we were good players, we knew we put on a good show, touring was immense, and, the whole experience really, really kind of gave us, you know, a real sort of motivation to try and do the best we can. And you know, people kept on allying us with, you know, bands like Simple Minds and U2 in terms of bands with world domination, all that kind of stuff. That didn't really mean very much to us. But I think, you know, because of events during the band's history, you know, we didn't find it that necessary to go down that road. So, you know, we just did what we did when we did. And, you know, it was a fun trip. It was a long time.
I see two distinct periods in Big Country's history. There was the 80s and there was the 90s, which was a truly distinctive period. First of all, can I just ask, why did Mark leave?
You're asking me questions that I'm digging into the depths of my mind to try and remember. Yeah, we got to a point where every band gets to, where, you know, people either are getting bored of doing things or things are not going in particular ways that people want to. And also, I mean, Stuart was going through... I mean, one of the things that I think has been quite reasonably well documented now is the fact that throughout our whole period, Stuart suffered with alcoholism. And there were things going on in his life which weren't making him function as well as we all wanted it to. And there came a point where basically, I think we all kind of thought, well, we should give it a break and have a rest. And Mark was specifically getting disillusioned because we weren't doing as much as he thought we should be. So he actually left for a while. And in the interim, you know, we carried on and, you know, we got some session drummers in and, you know, we made an album or two. And that infused with kind of record company complications. You know, that particular period wasn't the greatest period for the band. although creatively, you know, we still put the same effort into the music, there were a lot of things against us.
Yeah, I know. There's some hidden gems from the 90s period, particularly since you've released those rarities albums over the last 10 years or so. The No Place Like Home sessions were absolutely fantastic.
Well, it's funny because I remember doing the demos for those particular tracks and thinking that, you know, I mean, every time we went into an album project, it was, you know, it was one of the greatest aspects that a lot of people never, ever see, because when we sat down to do new material, it's a great aspect of the band, which, you know, we all thoroughly loved, but it all went wrong with our relationship with our record company at the time. You know, we weren't even getting the support, or, you know, the feedback was really very negative, or, you know, we were being asked to work with producers that we didn't particularly feel comfortable with, and, you know, it was a very sort of heavy political scene at the time, which ended up us parting company from Phonogram Records, which was maybe the best thing to happen to us. But again, it all contributed to the sort of what I think people regard as a lean period.
It culminated with Buffalo Skinners, which was produced by yourselves, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was because we kind of got together with the guy who originally signed us to Phonogram Records, a guy called Chris Briggs. He started his own label, which was through Chrysalis Records. And having him back on board, you know, he was a very big motivating force for us as a band. And again, you know, the material that we were writing and putting together at that time was kind of really reflecting how we were all feeling musically. I remember specifically myself and Bruce really feeling as though that we wanted to get back to making guitars, you know, loud and proud again.
Yeah.
And you know, Stuart's writing was leaning onto more and more to the countryside and the softer side, but he kind of realized that, you know, we were still essentially a rock band. And so when we put the Buffalo Skinners together, we really decided that it was going to have, you know, a harder edge to it. And, you know, the quality of the songs would be still as deep and melodic as normal, but they'd just have a harder edge sound. And having, temporarily forgot the guy's name, but the guy we had playing drums with us was Simon. He was phenomenal. I mean, I've worked with him before, but he was phenomenal on drums on that album. And the whole thing just felt like rejuvenated and remotivated. And, you know, the Buffalo Skinners, I think, was still one of my favourite albums.
So I guess through the 90s, you guys didn't get the airplay and the promotion you really deserved, because there really was some gems in that period. What are the highlights for you? I guess the last album, Driving to Damascus, you were working with Ray Davies on a few of the tracks. Did you have much to do with him, or was that just mainly to do with Stuart?
Well, what happened was Ray Davies apparently was watching TV one night and saw the band doing an acoustic session, and he was scheduled to play at Nebworth. So he got in touch with our management and asked if there was a chance of him teaming up with us to do some acoustic stuff, which obviously we jumped at the chance. And for us as members of Big Country, getting to play with Ray Davies playing Kink songs and him playing Big Country songs was just awesome. And, you know, the relationship just grew from there. And he and Stuart went to New York and wrote some songs, and we spent some time out in Nashville writing songs. And, you know, when we came back to record that album, there was a great sort of rejuvenated spirit for the band. And, you know, we had everything kind of in place to really bring the band back with a real bang. And the material was there, the album was fantastic. And then it went really badly wrong. We released the first track, Fragile Thing, and British radio were playing it big style. But the people who compiled the charts decided that some of the packaging didn't conform to their regulations, and basically what looked like a top 30 chart entry ended up charting at somewhere around 70, which killed everything.
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember that,
How did that affect the morale of you guys as a band?
Basically, it destroyed us.
It did?
Completely.
Yeah.
I mean, we just thought that, you know, our midweek predictions were top 30. You know, the record was getting the respect it was due. It was a great record. Eddie Reader on it. And, you know, the whole thing was fantastic. It was a great song. But because of this technicality, it didn't do what it was supposed to do. And basically, it completely destroyed us. I know Stuart went back to America vowing never to come back to Britain.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it was an uphill struggle from then on.
Is that what led to you guys naming your next tour The Final Fling?
Yeah, because I think by this time Stuart had enough. He'd had enough of the band, he'd had enough of stuff. There's stuff going on in his personal life which made him relocate to America. And it was always going to be tough to run a band with people living, you know, like 6,000 miles apart from each other. It's bad enough when I lived, you know, down south of England and they lived up in Scotland. But somebody actually living in Nashville was going to be really bad. So we decided to take a break, basically. We decided we'll do the final tour and really sort of have a good time doing it and then stop and regroup at another time. But unfortunately, that never happened.
So it wasn't too long after that Stuart passed away. How did you personally and the band deal with his passing?
Well, I can't really comment on how the other guys, because just before The Final Fling, I mean, myself and Stuart decided that we were going to call the band, call halt on the proceedings. I mean, I physically left the band. I just said that I'm not going to do this until either things get better or attitudes change or, you know, in Stuart's case, until he got himself together. It was a conscious decision to stop. And I hadn't had any contact with him for about a year. And then I got the news that he passed away. So I actually didn't see him. But, I mean, I was hearing reports from lots of people, you know, saying how his physical condition was deteriorating and, you know, he was looking really bad and so on and so forth. And this is all, you know, alcohol-related stuff, so...
Was it right that he'd gone missing once before for a period?
Yeah, but, I mean, again, that's a story that kind of got blown out of proportion. But,
yeah,
we decided that we weren't going to be doing much anyway, so... But I think we were just invited to do some very big shows, of which, you know, it didn't happen because he wasn't to be found, and, you know, he just wanted to be away and alone and sort of try to reorganize his life and... You know, it wasn't any big deal. I mean, the plan was that, you know, a few years off and then get together and see if we wanted to play again. But, you know, his life went in another direction, which was unfortunately maybe quite a sour one. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when I got the news that he passed away, you know, obviously it's not what you want to hear.
Absolutely not, after spending such a long time together in a working relationship.
Yeah, I mean, we were a very close-knit unit. You know, we were a bunch of pals and, you know, we were never, you know, when we were just together as people, you know, we were a bunch of guys, you know, like any other bunch of guys kicking about doing something that they all enjoyed. We were never a cynical musical entity that did everything with business and making money behind it. You know, we did what was completely natural to us, and that's what made it so valid to us.
That was Big Country with The Hostage Speaks. That was a rare version, demo version that was off Rarities 5, released a few years back. It didn't actually make it to the album. Absolutely unbelievable. You're listening to Kaleidoscope Ears. We've been talking with Tony Butler from the UK. And joining me in the studio, after SMS after SMS message coming through, you've been petitioned back the King of Soft Rock Enthusiasts in Southern Tasmania, Mr. ELO Joe.
Oh, thank you for that introduction again, Dwayne. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
I know it's a pleasure. Of course it is. Anytime we're playing Big Country, it's always a pleasure.
Yes, it is.
It was 12 months ago that we were doing the rarity shows, and you joined me then.
Yeah, I was here then too, yes.
Even Lonnie Matthews made an appearance.
He did, didn't he? Yes.
The king of the square triangle and other percussive instruments, who has his home in a Tasmanian wilderness.
Somewhere.
I don't know whether he's actually in the wilderness or the Volvo is parked in the wilderness and he's in the Volvo, but I'm not sure. But that's Lonnie Matthews anyway. We're talking Big Country. That was The Hostage Speaks. Prior to that, just before the second segment of our interview with Tony, we heard another track from the BBW EP, and that was called Time So Wild, which is a fantastic track. Probably for me, personally, I think it's probably the most reminiscent of the former Big Country sound. And what are your thoughts? How long have you actually been here? It seems like you've been here forever.
Yes.
What have you heard so far?
No, I was listening to the interview you were conducting with Tony Butler. Sounds like a decent bloke.
He's the sort of
bloke that you'd like to have as a friend in the music industry, in the cutthroat, competitive, highly competitive industry, of the music industry. A great friend to have, I reckon.
Well, that's good.
Someone who'd back you up and support you there when you're down and out. Ready to, you know, throw you a lifeline. And that's what it really essentially, from what I listened to then, essentially that's what he was doing for his friend, wasn't he? He was offering him a lifeline, his friend Stuart.
Absolutely. Now, the web is an amazing tool, which we talk about with Tony a little bit later. So there's some messages from fans that have been posted on the bigcountry.co.uk website.
They're going wild, Dwayne.
They are going wild. What have we got here? Let me see. Stephen says, thanks for the music and the memories. Could we be seeing anything new music-wise in the future, whether it's Big Country or not? Stephen, stay tuned. Tony does answer that question in the next segment. Jeff says hi. I think Jeff's over in the States. It's a bit early for him to
Jeff
be...
Jeff Lynn?
No, not Jeff Lynn.
Ah, great.
Sorry to disappoint you there. Amanda, listen to this one. I know Tony's listening. Love you, Tony. Hope you find fulfillment and happiness in whatever you do. Your MySpace songs are beautiful.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, I've got a couple of those tracks too, which I might... Hopefully there'll be time to squeeze them in the next hour. Michelle over in Melbourne, she says, thanks for the music, Tony, and for stepping up to the mic for BBW.
Yeah, and that's true, yes, of course.
So, Michelle, she's a very hardcore fan over there in Melbourne, I can tell you. Simon over in New Zealand, he's listening in. He says, Tony, thank you for the music over the years. So inspirational. Nothing compares. And he's made a couple of requests too. We'll try and squeeze some of that. Well, I already started playing one when the request came through. So you must have read my mind, Simon. And a couple of other requests there as well, which we'll get to in a second. Now, on the BBW EP, which is only available, I can't see it getting a commercial release in Australia. You might be able to import it. I'm not sure. Stranger things have happened. But if you want to get yourself a copy, we've played a few of the tracks from it so far. You can get it from bigcountry.co.uk. Go to the shop there and you'll be able to grab yourself a copy of this fantastic EP from the members of Big Country. Bruce Watson, the guitarist from Big Country, doesn't do many vocal tracks, but in the next couple he does. I thought I'd start it off at first of all with a vocal track he did on the 25 Live album, which was from 2007. It was the Big Country's latest...
Oh, this is a rare treat then.
Yeah, latest rendition of Fragile Thing.
Oh, great.
So it was a few years later, and you guys got together. It was only in 2007 for the 25th anniversary tour. And after that tour, there was talk of a new album and a single, which ultimately became five songs. Why just the five songs? Why not a full album?
Well, we started putting the songs together. We been put together with this really nice guy, producer guy called Pete Brown, who's the son of the legendary Joe Brown. And, you know, we found we got a really good working situation. We all adopted new roles. I mean, I was at that time, just really got very enthusiastic about it and started writing a lot of songs myself, and Bruce was writing stuff. And we were beginning to sort of re-sculpt the identity of just the three of us. And we started recording material as just the three of us. If it continued on that path, I think, you know, we might have seen more tracks recorded and more enthusiasm for the project. But we were also being told that if we were going to really make it work, then we'd have to get a little bit too cynical about things, which would mean bringing in other people, you know, not somebody to replace Stuart, but bringing in another named person to give it a kind of supergroup kudos and stuff like that. And to be honest, I just wasn't interested. I just said no. It's either we do as a three-piece. I'm not bothered. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
I'm not a career rock star.
Yeah.
We do things because I want to do it. And to get somebody else in a cynical way just to make, you know, the name or rejuvenate the name Big Country as a commercial entity was just something I wasn't happy about entertaining.
I think that.
But if we were.
That'd be staying true to Stuart's philosophy too, yeah?
Well, as I say, Stuart's philosophy was the band's philosophy. And, you know, if somebody said, well, like, you just guys finish an album with just the three of you, and I think that might have happened. But also we were having some problems about what to do with the name as well.
Yeah, you were going to release it under Big Country, weren't you? But that changed.
We were, because we thought we had every right to do that. But there were mentions that that may be a problem. So in order to not make it a problem, we decided to call it BBW, purely and simply because that's who it was. that's something very much to do with the title of the EP in our name. But essentially, to anybody who knows, it's Big Country, but it's Big Country without Stuart. And to be honest, I never want to engage in a band called Big Country where, you know, Stuart is kind of substituted or replaced in any way. I won't, you know, out of courtesy to his memory, I just wouldn't do that. I'd much rather it be a new, something new anyway.
Yeah, well, it's been tried before and it hasn't really been that successful with other bands, so...
No, it's just the whole idea of Big Country in the first place. It wasn't a cynical exercise in becoming famous and earning lots of money. It was about a bunch of guys getting together to make music and being very compatible doing it. And I think what myself, Mark and Bruce felt is that we still had that compatibility, but just the three of us. But in a music industry cynical way, it wasn't going to reap the rewards as quickly as some people thought it should be. And that's certainly not my philosophy. I have no interest in that.
Now, speaking about a couple of the tracks on the EP, Time So Wild, that seems to be a reflection on the past and the fantastic times that you had. And
definitely.
In our name, that seems to be a pretty cynical look at the world in some ways.
Can you tell me about the
process and of writing those new tracks? And did you collaborate much with Bruce and Mark on those?
Well, those particular tracks, I mean, I kind of wrote myself, but obviously as we used to with a band, you know, we take ideas and we arrange stuff and rework it and put it together so it really fits everybody's characters and personalities. But lyrically, I mean, since in this interim time, I mean, I've done a couple of solo albums myself, and I recently, about 5-6 years ago, I wrote an album called Life Goes On, which was basically, you know, it was a cathartic exercise for me to say that, you know, I love Stuart dearly and I'll miss him, but you know, we've all got to kind of forge ahead. And when I started writing lyrics for that album, I just found myself thinking that I can develop a lyrical style. So I wanted to write a song about the band, how we felt, and how fantastic it was to be in that situation, which culminated in Time So Wild.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I look back at it, you know, I'm a very straight, down-to-earth person. I come from humble backgrounds, and everything that's happened to me in the band has been absolutely astonishing, and I feel very lucky and privileged to have lived that life. And I wanted to reflect that in the lyrics, and I knew that the lyrics will be very sympathetic to how Mark and Bruce would want to express their feelings about what we'd engaged in. And so I was very pleased with the way that lyric came out. And in my name was just really, you know, as we always did, you sit down in front of the TV and you watch the news, and a lot of us just didn't feel very comfortable with what was going on in sort of kind of world affairs. People going out to different countries and getting themselves killed because they're supposedly protecting us, and you know, people weren't specifically asking us. You know, I certainly don't want, you know, young families of young soldiers who go out to foreign countries and get themselves killed and come back, people saying, well, they've done it in order to protect the way that I live. You know, I'd like to have a say in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think there's going to be any more material recorded with Bruce and Mark?
Not in the foreseeable future. Basically, it's something that will always be under discussion. The door is never closed. I mean, I've recently gone through a very trying sort of personal situation, which has made me kind of very much not be involved physically myself in music, but I'm sort of being tempted into it again through various means.
The fans will always be on your back, Tony.
Yeah, they always will be. But, you know, there may be things happening which might bring things together. I mean, there's so many... The one thing that's really weird about it is that, you know, myself and Bruce and Mark are all getting on in years, and, you know, we've all got different things going on in our lives, and to tie things together to make it work for everybody, it gets more and more difficult as time goes on. But, you know, if something happens which kind of feels good for us to do, then I'm sure we'll do it. I mean, the one thing about Mark and Bruce and I is the fact we're... Our friendship will be forever, and it will never die. But maybe it might not be the right thing to do at the time. But you know, we're disappointed that we couldn't see the BBW thing further. Because to be honest, I mean, I know each one of us have got a lot more material that we had ready to record, but we never got a chance to get around to doing it.
Yeah, great shame. You mentioned your solo material as well a little earlier. Any plans for anything, any other solo stuff?
Not at the moment, because as I said earlier on in our conversation, I got into teaching big style, and I work for some colleges. I work in higher education.
So you're and teaching I really music, are you? Teaching music?
Yeah, I teach music industry production and technology. So I'm really, everything that I've done in my life, I'm now teaching, which is fantastic. And it makes me feel very good about what I do, and the students that I teach are certainly benefiting from my experience. But and as with every teacher, you're continually furthering your own qualifications. I'm currently doing a master's just now myself, so sitting down writing songs is very difficult when you're filling your head with academic nonsense.
A lot of other things to do. Now, the internet has been an amazing tool in bringing big country fans together worldwide. I mean, you're talking to me on the other side of the world in Tasmania, Australia, and fans are continuing to support big country to this day. Is there anything you'd like to say to the fans? They'll be listening.
All I'd love to say, and I do mean love in the biggest sense, is the fact that we cannot express our feelings about how we've been supported, not only during the times when the band was actually active, but you know, in these long years of inactivity as well. I mean, it's extraordinary. I think maybe in that way we're one of the luckiest bands in the world. We still are a band, although we're not actually doing anything. We're a band of brothers. We're a band of people who have always been indelibly linked with this experience that we've all shared. And I can only say thank you and how brilliant. And I hope they've, you know, got as much out of it as we have. And as I said, it's not, maybe not over yet. But if it's not over yet and we come back and do something, it will be our intention to make it as worthwhile and as fantastic as it has been in the past. The only difference is Stuart won't be here to share it with us.
I've been asked by a couple of fans to... There's apparently a fan gathering happening in Liverpool in a couple of weeks' time. Are you going
to
be there?
To be honest, I didn't know about it.
Well, you do now. Are you going to go up there?
I know about it. I think the date that it's actually on... I'm actually doing another gig with some friends of mine on that particular night, yeah. Now, every now and again, because when you're working within the educational area that I'm in, you know, every now and again I get involved with either some jam nights or blues nights or pick-up nights, and I've got a few colleagues here who I've been playing some very, very good old-fashioned rock music with, and... we got a little gig going on somewhere, so I'm not going to be able to make that gathering, but I'll obviously send a message to the guys out there and, again, thank them for their interest and so on and so forth. But, again, when it's time to do something properly, I'll get fully engaged.
Tony Butler, thanks very much for joining us on Kaleidoscope Ears.
It was brilliant, and thank you for taking any trouble to talk to me about it.
BBW there, fronted by Tony Butler. That was called In My Name from the BBW EP. In Our Name, which was released in, I think it was around October last year. I think I might have to get a second copy. I've nearly worn it out. Your thoughts?
You like it, don't you?
Well, I kind of do, yeah. Yeah. And I've got to say big thanks to Ian Grant, who's managed Big Country right from the beginning, and he was instrumental in organising that interview with Tony Butler. So big thanks to you, Mr. Ian Grant. What are your thoughts on the music? Can you cope with it? So it's not too heavy for you.
No, I can cope with it. I quite like his ode to his friend Stuart Adamson, the song Dream Boy.
That was Dream Boy. That was from his solo album, which was called Life Goes On. Yeah.
I like it. And quite, as I was saying off air, I liked components of that song, particularly the chorus.
You're analysing it too much.
Yeah, I am. But I tend to do that with every song, and I like that. I did. It was rolling along beautifully. And then we're also talking about what the band members are doing now, and it's interesting that Tony Butler now teaches a subject that he's very familiar with.
As opposed to, we were talking about John Wallacechuk from Klaatu, who is now accounting.
An accountant. You know, to me, that's almost a cop-out. There's a very creative man who produced arguably some good stuff back in the 70s in Canada. Well, the first album was very popular, and it created a lot of mystery. To have at the end of the line, well, not at the end of the line, but to have him do that and then turn up as an accountant, you know, joining the rat race again, is to me a little sad.
Definitely.
But Tony Butler's doing something
he
likes.
But we're here to talk about Big Country. So we'll do some clatu.
I was just talking about...
Some clatu, another clatu. Time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just the subject of what they're doing now.
I should mention, no, I don't think anyone's picked up on it yet, but earlier I mentioned that Steeltown, the live track that I played earlier, was from the album Come Up Screaming, and that was incorrect. It was from the album Without the Aid of a Safety Net, which was a live album released in the early to mid-90s.
Well, I'd be coming up screaming if I was alive without a safety net. I'd be screaming, my leg, that was, my spine.
That was quick, but I didn't really get me there with that one.
Sorry, died.
Here's another one from BBW. This one is Make for the Wire. You're listening to Kaleidoscope Ears on Edge Radio 99.3. That was Big Country with Perfect World from Driving to Damascus 1999. It was one of the singles that came off the album. And prior to that, we tried to play Blue on a Green Planet from Why the Long Face. And I've actually got two copies of that album. One is my Sit in the Car and Thrash It to Death version. And the other one is Sit on the Shelf and Rarely Touch version. I've picked up the one that's thrashed to death, and it's got some scratches on the last track. So
you should have got the one off the shelf.
I know. I do apologise. But we've got a couple of more minutes left in the show, so we're going to finish off with a couple of Big Country tracks. Your thoughts on tonight's foray into the land that is Big Country, Mr. ELO Joe?
Couldn't be bigger, could it? No, I described them as being, and you corrected me, in the way I worded it, I said they were heavy folk rock. Would that be the right classification? I know a lot of artists don't like being classified and categorised, but we can't help it, and they can't either. When they produce something, they probably think, "Oh, was that too folksy or disco?" Is that correct? Would that be heavy folk rock?
No. I wouldn't say. I'd say they'd be more hard rock that comes from Scotland,
which has folk roots, hasn't it?
Well, so you could be mistaken for believing such at times, but it's not my personal belief.
Okay,
but if that's what you want to think, that's fine. As long as you like the music, I don't care what you think.
I do. I do enjoy the music. I do enjoy the music.
You keep going back to the '80s, talking about that was when their heyday was. I'm going to play a track.
Well, that's what I remember of Big Country.
Yeah, there's so much more to Big Country than the 80s, though, let me tell you. But you're right, though. That was their major period. We're going to finish off with two tracks tonight from Big Country. But before we go, just a quick mention for local listeners in Hobart. Damo Suzuki, who was on the program about 12 months ago, is going to be appearing at the Brisbane Hotel this coming Thursday night.
Oh, there he is behind you.
Suzuki's
Network.
Damo, what do you call him?
It's Damo.
Damo Suzuki,
so
the legendary lead singer of Can from 71 to 74.
Seriously, Can?
Can.
As in...
German Krautrock.
Oh, sorry, I'm thinking...
Yeah, I don't know what you're thinking.
No, I'm thinking... I think it was Can Heat.
Okay. But it's German Krautrock anyway. And he'll be playing at the Brisbane this week. So next week, it's quite possible that we'll be doing our Armandul feature with Nobby back on deck after his brief respite over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, get along to that. And possibly Matt Warren from the network will be in the studio with us as our guest programmer for Armandul. But that's next week. This is thanks very much, ELO Joe, for coming back. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dwayne.
Kate Bush was with Big Country on a couple of the tracks from 1986's The Seer album. This is it. It's the title track.